Welcome to the Law Shit You Should Know podcast. We're here to talk a little bit about the law
and a whole lot about nothing. Every week, we have a new guest to discuss current events, legal drama, and dive even deeper into
the Law Shit You Should Know. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Law Shit You Should Know with Alina Santana.
And Leslie Marenko.
And Randy Weber today. Randy, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're here. So let's start off by telling everybody who you are and what you do. Please.
So my name is Randy Weber. I am a civil trial lawyer. I'm board certified. I have been trying cases for nearly 30 years, and my work really specializes in trying personal injury, medical malpractice, and wrongful death cases on behalf of victims of accidents, as well as trying some first-party insurance coverage disputes on behalf of policyholders and insureds. Yeah. I've tried about 10 cases, jury trials, in the last 2.5 years in that area. And I've had fantastic time doing it. It's fun. It's representing the people who are wearing the white hat against the insurance carriers who are typically not wearing the white hat.
Sure, but and we're going to talk about tort reform, but tort reform has been one thing in the PI arena, right? The first party plaintiff arena is like fucking dead. This is crazy what has happened there. And that was actually going to be the topic for a totally different podcast with a totally different guest. But interesting that you brought it up because...
Well, they've gutted the area. The legislature has completely gutted first party coverage disputes. And the problem with that is the logic that went into providing attorney's fees to the prevailing party in an insurance dispute was intended to even the playing field between the poor insureds and the very wealthy insurers. And that has been completely gutted, and it no longer exists.
I think we're assuming a lot of facts for our audience. So can you tell everyone what we're actually talking about?
Sure.
What is this legislation?
So the legislation involves the repeal of Florida Statute 627.4128, which provides for attorney's fees to a prevailing party in a dispute with an insurance carrier. So let's say you own a home, you have insurance through Citizens, it's damaged as a result of a storm or another
hurricane.
Event, a covered event. And typically, if the insurance company either denied the claim wrongfully or underpaid the claim, then you could go out and hire yourself a lawyer who would take the case on a contingency fee, but would get paid as a prevailing party by the insurance carrier separately and apart from the benefits you get under your insurance policy, which worked out to everybody's benefit because the insured would get the money necessary to make the repairs and the attorney would get paid separately and not out of the proceeds of the recovery, which would allow the insured to make all the repairs necessary to put their home back in the condition it was before the date of the loss. That system is gone. And the problem with that is that insurance carriers are generally abusive, even when there's a risk of attorney's fees.
Yeah.
So now that there's no downside
risk
of
attorney's
fees. Exactly.
Because they have been.
They have been cavalier. And I can tell you stories about the cases that I've been involved in where the dispute was over $50,000 and the insurance carriers at the end of the day paid out $500,000 between attorney's fees and interest and other things and other penalties. So it is an area that is ripe for abuse. And I feel that it's really been a disservice to the consumers in the state of Florida.
I mean, and imagine if there were already abuses before, and they were also, I like how you put it so well, cavalier. I'm like, fuckers, don't pay out shit. Right. I mean, if they were already doing that before when there were actual consequences because you were going to get all of your attorney's fees for all the bullshit and shenanigans that they were pulling, imagine now. I just see no end to the abuse that can be done. There's no repercussion. It's a law now that, oh, great, they have to pay for what? They're going to offer you $2,000 for your fucking roof coming off.
If that.
And what are you going to do about it? I mean, really? I mean, and looking at it, even if I tried to go to the other side, from a business perspective, why would I pay you out more? What the fuck are you going to do about it? Sucks for you. Vote for somebody else next time. It's wild.
And they are already so crazy abusive. We had a loss in our house a couple years ago, and I remember looking at the itemization of the things they were reimbursing us for, and it was like, drywall, 63 cents. I'm like, really? Where do I buy drywall for 63 cents?
Tell me.
You tell me where we buy drywall for 63 cents. I was like, that's absurd.
Well, they use software that it's so funny. They use this software called Xactimate in order to come up with those estimates. And I always laugh because I feel like the insurance carriers and Xactimate, they live in some bizarro world that has nothing to do with reality.
We're drywall
63 cents. And you're like, what world are you living in? I mean,
this is the outlet Home Depot.
Well, and
Even at the outlet, you're not getting drywall for 60%.
To give you even greater perspective on it, I've had now three or four of these trials where I've asked the jury to award X, and they've given us X plus 30%, 40% without being asked for it.
Because they're pissed.
They're angry, and they also recognize that the estimates are usually low.
Yeah.
And that things are getting more and more expensive.
Sure.
Oh, yes,
and so jurors take it into their own hands to award fair and adequate compensation. Because remember, in an insurance policy situation, the insurer's job is to put the home back into its condition pre-loss.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever that takes and whatever it costs in the moment that it that you're doing it, right? So if it's today, it's probably 25% more expensive than it was a year and a half ago.
Right.
And jurors are recognizing that.
And it's, you know, Randy, it's not even just that, but as even as lawyers, I think we are a little more open to being in litigation and all this. But I can tell you, as someone who's been on the other side of it as a homeowner, it's just aggravating and frustrating.
And exhausting.
And exhausting. And the sheer level of mental gymnastics and stress that this causes someone, even if ultimately you get all your money, not that everyone does, but ultimately if you do.
After three years of litigation.
I'm not sure 30% extra even compensates right. for the amount of gray hair and stress that this causes.
It doesn't. You're 100% right. And the other thing I was going to mention in that regard is that most of the time insurance carriers, they will serve a proposal for settlement to their insureds in order to really ratchet up the pressure. The proposal for settlement, as you know, is an amount of money that the insurance company offers to, in this case, the insured.
Sure.
And if they don't accept it within 30 days and they don't recover at least 75% of that amount of money, then they become exposed for the attorney's fees incurred by the insurance carrier.
Yep.
And that can be a massive downside. And you can't buy insurance, proposal for settlement insurance. You can buy it generally. You know,
yeah.
you're familiar with the product.
Sure.
You can't buy it in first party cases. They won't sell it to you. So you are not going to be able to buy insurance.
Really?
Yeah, I've tried and they won't sell it to you.
I've tried.
I've applied for it.
Does add a lot of pressure.
It does, because now all of a sudden you have people typically, if they own a home, they have assets, they are exposed.
Sure.
Now they're nervous. And now their insurance carrier is really threatening them for having exercised their rights under the contract.
Yeah. That we paid you for a gazillion years, fuckers.
And never made a claim.
Right.
And let me tell you, as a matter of evidence, a lot of times we don't get to get into the fact that there were never any claims made before. It's very hard to get into that. But the jury really should know that. This is not an abusive person who makes a claim.
Right, who makes a claim every 6 months. Right.
Right. This is one time. And we don't get to tell the jurors what the premiums were. But the premiums, especially today, are really high.
Yeah, they're absurdly high.
So imagine paying for the benefit of having your insurance company abuse you in a litigation. That's the privilege you're paying for, is to be abused and beat up at trial.
Fuck the insurance company.
Well, except for this.
You heard it here first.
Since I make a living.
Shakespeare, like, kill all the lawyers, kill all the insurance companies.
Except if there was no insurance, I don't know what I would do for a living. I probably would have to find something else.
We got to go to another state, Randy.
It's yes.
Fine. We'll find you something equally as fulfilling.
I'm considering it.
Moving out of Florida.
What are these other states that are...
Well, Kentucky.
States have good PIP laws,
Kentucky
Randy.
Is... Well, I don't know about PIP, but I think that Kentucky is pretty friendly to plaintiffs.
On the first party?
First party and third party.
And is it because of tornadoes?
I don't know the answer, because if you'd asked me if Kentucky would be the place that I'd want to go for progressive thinking.
No, that's not what comes to mind. Not going to lie.
Hey, do they have any hurricanes in Kentucky? What do they got?
I don't think
How are we getting, what are the events?
They have tornadoes.
Tornadoes?
I don't know.
Frozen pipes?
I don't know. I kind of associate that whole part of the country with
tornadoes. I don't know. We got to do an analysis, Randy. I don't know.
I've also heard
best in your law firm.
I've heard West Virginia and Colorado. Two other states that are
well, but
good
I can't think
party.
Of any natural disasters that happen in either one of those. Well, earthquakes in Colorado.
Well, everything will freeze
not
in
really.
Those places.
Frozen
and frozen
mudslides.
Mudslides, yes.
Weight from snow on roofs and things of that.
Oh, I see. We've done some research, Randy.
Yeah,
Randy's getting ready to move.
Randy's opened up subsidiary law firms.
I enjoy skiing.
I see.
But that area of practice, of my practice, it's relatively new for me, and I've really enjoyed it. And it's a shame, because now with the change in the law, I'm not going to probably do a whole lot more of those. And by the way, I don't typically generate those cases in my firm. I usually get brought in to help try them with other firms, other lawyers who aren't necessarily comfortable trying cases or haven't tried that many, or just want somebody to come in and provide support in that regard. So I do that.
I got you. Well, let's talk about the other part of your practice. Mm-hmm. So the personal injury, med mal, all that jazz. Yeah. Tell us about that.
What let's see how now we're getting fucked even when we get injured.
Right.
Because this whole year has been, you know, quite a dumpster fire.
So that's right. There's also been significant tort reform in the area of personal injury. And it is troubling and problematic. The big areas where the law has changed. Number one, statute of limitations. So the statute of limitations was 4 years on garden variety tort, 2 years on medical malpractice, and 2 years on wrongful death. Now, all of the tort SOLs, statutes of limitation, have been reduced to 2 years. So that shortens the period of time to file suit.
Two years from the date of the
From the date that of the incident or from the date
when you should have known,
known of the negligence.
Okay.
And then there's a statute of repose that applies as well. But I always count from the day of whatever the event is, right, for
okay.
the 2 years. The problem with that is that the legislature claimed that it was going to reduce the amount of litigation. In reality, it's increased the amount of litigation because now you have lawyers who are just filing.
You got to file faster.
I was about to say, I remember when this passed, and I have nothing to do with this area of law, but just from speaking to other lawyers and networking and all that, everyone was just on a mass binge of filing every
right.
case. They were all terrified. And I heard really crazy stories about some of these actual filings and how terrible they were and how bare bones they were. And some of them had the wrong people on them and the wrong facts. And just, it was crazy.
All that's correct. But, you know, that wasn't driven by the change in the statute of limitations.
Okay.
That was driven by the fact that there were certain evidentiary rules that were also changing in terms of the amount of damages that you could recover.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was filing suit before this legislation became enacted because they wanted to fall under the old regime of how damages
yeah.
were calculated instead of the new one. And it wasn't clear whether there'd be retroapplication. Now, before the change in March of this year, we had a pure comparative negligence state. So a plaintiff could be 1% or 99% responsible and still make a recovery. It didn't matter. It could run the gamut.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the case is like a pie and it gets split up however it gets split up. Today, we've changed to a 50% bar. So if the jury finds that the plaintiff is more than 50% comparatively negligent, they lose completely. It's a complete bar to any recovery,
oh.
as in Georgia and a lot of other states now around the country. And the problem with that is, of course, it's another access to the courts. It's that's the issue. It used to be the case that we only had a 50% bar if alcohol was involved. It was called the alcohol bar statute. So if you were found to be under the influence of alcohol to the point that your normal faculties were impaired or you had above a 0.08 in your breath alcohol.
Even if you didn't cause the accident. For
even if, well, no, actually, you had to have been found to have been comparatively negligent, at least 50%, but as a result of the alcohol.
And this is an issue for the jury, this 50%?
Yes.
Like, you got to take this shit all the way to trial and to jury to figure out
correct.
That they think that your client is 55% negligent, so
or 51%. Or 51%. And guess what?
Oh, this is...
The jury never gets to learn that if they find that there's
right, they
51%,
don't know.
The plaintiff loses.
Right.
Because then a jury might say, well, you know what? Forget it. I'm going to find that they were 49% because
right.
I don't want this person to walk away empty-handed.
Right.
But they never get to learn that. They're not instructed in that way.
Jeez.
So it's a real minefield for plaintiffs and for plaintiffs' lawyers.
Jeez.
So those are the big areas of tort reform and the changes. There are a couple of other things in negligent security cases. There's a pretty significant change. It used to be the case that if a person was injured as a result of a criminal act on a commercial piece of property.
By a third party.
By a third party. By a criminal. The criminal could
allegedly.
Not.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Allegedly. We are all, I used to do criminal defense work a long time ago.
Oh, I could see that.
allegedly. So it used to be the case that the perpetrator's name would not show up on the verdict form. So the jury couldn't blame the criminal. They could only either blame the plaintiff or they could blame the property owner for not having adequate security. Now the law has changed so that the perpetrator, the criminal, gets on the verdict form. So now the jury can divide liability up
yeah.
between the plaintiff, the property owner, and the criminal. And who do you think is going to probably get the lion's share of the responsibility?
You've given the criminal a name, a face, or whatever, and you
can
more easily...
When did that start?
That started on March of this year.
Oh, wow.
And so what was happening, and you may see these cases around, people were recovering a ton of money from property owners for their failure to provide adequate security, which resulted in criminal acts.
Yeah, you know, I've seen so many of those, especially with like some of the areas that are not as safe in South Florida, and people will get shot or, you know, mugged, shot, whatever, and it'll happen at like a dark gas station that should have had more lights, should have had security, or, you know, at a check casting store where we know there's a certain amount of security that should have been there, you know. Yeah, I've absolutely seen these cases.
So I will tell you that anytime you're buying auto insurance, buy as much uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage as you can.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
I mean, do people even have driver's licenses?
Let's talk about insurance. This is an interesting topic because I don't remember who brought this up, and I was saying I'm fully covered because I lease, and so when you lease, they require you to buy so much more insurance than
full coverage, whatever.
Full coverage, right? And then someone starts talking to me about all these things that are not covered by full coverage by the lease, and I'm like, oh, I'm fucked. Like,
I call that fool's coverage.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, and
it's all right.
People are constantly telling me forever, I have full coverage. And I'm like, no, you have fool's coverage. Because you cover your car, and you cover if you damage somebody else's car, and you have PIP, and maybe they have bodily injury liability, but they don't have uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage. Right. And I'm telling you that in Miami, that's the best coverage you can buy.
Yeah.
Because there are all sorts of irresponsible, uninsured people on the road. And believe it or not, and I'm sure this is pretty easy to believe, the most irresponsible drivers are the ones without anything to lose. So they don't have coverage, they don't have assets, and they drive like maniacs.
But, you know, let me give you some perspective from the other side, right? I talk about all the time how I'm an immigration attorney. Florida is a very anti-immigrant state, generally. And as a result, we do not grant driver's licenses to a lot of people who are immigrants. Miami in particular is 73% either foreign-born or first-generation. There is a huge population that are not necessarily, you know, that are just, it's impossible for them to get a driver's license, thus impossible to get real insurance, et cetera, et cetera. And so while we can talk about, yes, there's lots of irresponsible drivers that are out there doing things they shouldn't be doing, but there's this whole other aspect of people that I deal with that I have conversations about. You shouldn't be driving, you don't have a driver's license. And it's I need to work. Yeah. I need to feed my family. And so they don't have licenses. And I'm not saying that's okay. I understand it's breaking the law. But what I am saying is Florida is such an anti-immigrant state, and we have such a high immigrant population that I absolutely believe that this adds to the problem in South Florida of uninsured people driving around.
I agree with that. But the problem is that even if they had a driver's license and they went out and got insurance, they would get insurance from a substandard carrier very lowest limits, which would not include bodily injury liability. It would only include what they call PIP and PD.
Yeah.
So PIP or PIP is your first party coverage that pays for your own medical expenses up to $10,000. And PD is property damage, and that will pay up to $10,000 for the other person's car that you damage as a result of your negligence.
Other person's like tire these days, right? Because like, right. I don't know what the fuck 10 G's covers anymore.
So you're just saying like what's minimum required is it doesn't matter who you are, because the minimum requirement is so low that it's not even going to solve.
It's not going to resolve any of those issues. But I agree with you. I mean, it would make better sense to allow people to have driver's licenses and then get insurance. At least they'd have something.
Something.
The other thing I will say about Florida, which is, I guess, refreshing, is that you can be undocumented and still make a claim for personal injuries in Florida.
You just can't get insurance.
Right. You can't get auto insurance.
Well, same with workers' compensation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of times, lawyers like you all and work comp lawyers will run into cases, and they'll refer them to a plaintiff's personal injury lawyer, and they'll say, look, this happened on the job. There's workers' compensation. I don't think you can do anything with this, but here, take a look at it. In workers' compensation, the benefits that are available are relatively minimal, right? Yeah. You get your medical bills paid, and you get 67% of your lost wages. That's it. You don't get pain and suffering, loss of quality of life, inconvenience, humiliation, embarrassment, none of that. Oftentimes, however, when there's a work comp accident, an injury, it's really the result of a third party's negligence, and it requires a little bit of digging. And if there's a third party whose negligence caused or contributed substantially to the injuries, then you can sue that third party without any sort of immunity applying.
Let's go back to car insurance, because I wanted to ask you some questions, and let's talk about uninsured motorist insurance. What is that for anyone listening?
So the easy way to explain that is UM or UIM is you buying insurance for the rest of the motoring public.
Mm-hmm.
So you're insuring everybody else. And the concept is that if an uninsured or an underinsured person causes you injuries, you can make a claim against them initially, but when you exhaust their policy limits, if they have any, then you can go to your own carrier and recover as if that was their insurance carrier.
It's only for personal injuries, not like vehicle or, okay.
That is correct. Just want to be clear. So you can also, like when you buy full coverage, what you're usually getting is comp and collision. So you're getting coverage for your own vehicle for comprehensive and collision. Why? Because the place where you're financing it or the place where you're leasing it is going to require that because that's their collateral and they want to make sure it's protected. But they couldn't care less about you.
But they don't give a shit about you, right?
And
my car
they
is
want
fully
their
covered.
Mercedes in good working order.
My Mercedes
order.
Is fully covered. I am not.
You.
It's basically what it comes down to.
I mean, think about it. Just like mortgage insurance or anything else. I mean, they only care about the collateral. They really don't care about whether or not you are capable of earning the money in order to pay
for the Mercedes.
Or to make sure you're feeling well. And I'll tell you, most people, because UM is a little more expensive, they avoid it.
Yeah,
especially
in Miami, I imagine. Yeah.
Well, I don't even think it's people avoid it. I don't think anybody talks about this.
Well,
like until I had this conversation, because I have an agent that I really like. I've had for many years. I don't opt for the
like
cheapest
a real
insurance.
Agent?
I
like
do.
A person.
I have.
You
I,
speak to.
I
someone.
Have an actual agent. I do not buy my car insurance on the internet. I have an agent. He's a free agent, so he shops it against all different companies.
I didn't even know this
I do not
anymore.
Yes, I do not pick Joe Schmo company just because they're 10
the
cents
lizard,
less than like
killed that industry.
Or, no, I don't pay for the 10 cent cheaper insurance that's from Joe Schmo over like Progressive.
You
or
don't
Allstate,
get Edoro
because I'm very like I don't get Edoro.
Okay.
No offense to Edoro.
No offense to Edoro.
But no, I don't.
No defamation
and
is
even then, nobody's ever had a conversation with me about uninsured motorists.
What do they not get money for selling this to you? Like, why the fuck wouldn't they?
I think it's
this?
Just nobody opts in for it, and they don't even mention it. It's just like
many insurance companies like Geico. Where you can save 15% for 15 minutes?
For 15% or less.
Well, let me tell you what they do. They don't quote uninsured motorist coverage ever. They default to reject UM so that you get a lower quote.
It's not as profitable because they're going to have to pay out. Oh.
And I think
well,
that's
just
what
want,
it is.
They want to get the lowest premiums in there so that they can attract the most customers. But the problem is that in the state of Florida, when you buy auto insurance with bodily injury liability, the statute says you automatically get uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage up to the amount of your bodily injury liability coverage unless you have knowingly and voluntarily waived your right to UM.
Okay.
So what you'll find is that a lot of times the insurance carriers are not getting proper, knowing, voluntary
waivers.
Right.
So then a person gets injured by an uninsured or underinsured driver, and you go to the insurance company and you say, look, you don't have a good waiver. You need to pay this person UM up to the amount of their bodily injury liability coverage, right? Even though you didn't get premiums for it. Well, what do you think they're going to do? Hit the road, take a hike, and we end up suing them for that. And I've had several cases where we've succeeded against Geico on that very theory, where they didn't get a proper knowing and voluntary waiver, and then they fought us, and we ended up hitting them for bad faith on top of it. So not only did they have to pay more than the BI limits, which
were,
in one case, were 100, I mean, we're talking about multiples of that for bad faith exposure. So UM is tricky, but my suggestion to my friends and family and my clients is get it. You should get it, you should pay for it, you should have it, because you're gonna need it down here.
Yeah, I agree.
Insurance to me, there's this old story I heard once, and I liken it to how insurance works. There was a guy in a village, in a very poor village, and he owned a donkey. It was his only asset.
Oh, I'm gonna like this story.
Oh.
Okay.
It's his only asset. And
but the donkey's his only asset.
His only asset. But he's dirt poor and he needs cash. So a friend of his suggests that they do a raffle drawing for the donkey.
Oh.
And they sell a dollar a ticket and they sell it to the whole village. And he's gonna get hundreds and hundreds of dollars for this donkey. And then one person's gonna win the donkey on the drawing. So on the day of the drawing, after they sold all these tickets, the donkey dies. And his friend says, oh my God, we're screwed. You got all this money and now you got a dead donkey. He goes, don't worry about that. I got a plan. So they stand up, they do the drawing. He picks the winner. All the losers, they rip up their tickets and they throw them in the air and they go home. And they're like, oh, forget it. I lost. The winner comes up and says, okay, I'm ready to get my donkey. And the guy says, I've got good news and I've got bad news. The bad news is the donkey died. The good news is I'm going to refund you your dollar. So he takes his dollar and goes home, and the rest of the 300 people who bought the raffle tickets, they get nothing, and they don't know any better.
And in any other context, this is fraud. Okay.
Right. But this is right. But that's how it works, because you have insurance selling policies to hundreds of people, and one person makes a claim. That one person, they get the fight. Now, maybe they get their premium refunded because there was a material misrepresentation, or maybe they fight to the end and they eventually get the money. But the other people have been paying their premiums for that benefit. They don't know. They're no wiser.
Oh, this is such a good story.
It's exactly how it works.
This is such a good, like,
It's a true analogy to what goes on with insurance. Yeah. So that's how I see the insurance world, basically. I'm pretty skeptical.
The whole thing is a fraud. Got it.
Now
allegedly. No.
Allegedly. Right. And we hear that all the time. Now, I'll tell you that if you want to give good advice to people, like to your clients, in a situation where they're injured on a commercial premises, I would tell people, based upon my experience, the three things you need to do if you're hurt at the mall or in a store, you need to make sure that you report it. You need somebody on that property to know, because you'd be perhaps not shocked about how many times, if you don't report it, you're accused of committing some kind of fraud and this is a scheme. Report it, take pictures.
Sure.
Ask people to take pictures around you if you can't do it yourself. And get the names of the people who are around. Get their numbers, because you're going to need those witnesses. And then, of course, hire a lawyer so the lawyer can demand preservation of the video and get all the evidence early on, because that stuff disappears very quickly. That's in my experience.
Yeah, so let's say you're walking through the mall and you slip. There's a puddle of water randomly in the middle of the mall and you slip. Being honest, though, how many people would stop and say, let me start taking pictures now. I've broken my leg.
By the way,
be surprised.
This just happened last weekend, and Alina took pictures of every fucking thing, and I got everybody's fucking name in the middle of Universal Studios. And, like, they tried coming to her mom with, like, some fucking paperwork. No, and she's like, she's not fucking signing shit.
We went to Universal Studios for Halloween Horror Nights. I do a family trip every year, adults-only family trip. And Leslie came along with us. And
I've been adopted.
And my mom tripped. It was, they had, like, a little sidewalk thing that literally had a dent in it.
No, no, you're not doing this story justice. This fucking lines are 3 hours long, and they got to reroute this goddamn line through the back lot of the park. And I used to work at Disney World, so I know very well, like, this is not a place where people usually go except for the employees. Yeah. This is also a drainage ditch is what there it is. It's a collection
the engineer
area.
Is correcting
and I used
me.
To be a civil engineer that dealt with drainage. So, of course, there's like, and it's dark and everything else, and they have this thing, and it's all of a sudden like, blink, right? And for normal young people, you would be like, jump over the way. Her mom, who is diabetic and should not be waiting in the store,
she's an eggshell plate.
Eggshell plate.
Classic.
And classic trips and falls and like destroys her knees. And the woman, her
not just
hands
her knees,
are bleeding.
Her hands. Yeah, her knees
and everything
were all,
else. And well, go ahead, Alina, because you could have written the 5-point thing of what you should do when you trip and fall.
I mean, I've learned my lessons the hard way, though, Leslie.
I guess so.
Talk about that story another day. But yeah, so she fell, and she is diabetic, so it maybe wasn't such a huge deal for a normal person, but because she's diabetic, when they rushed over, they were like, do you need a medic? And I was like, yes, call the medic. She needs to get sanitized.
Blood flow issues
aren't
good
here. Because I don't
want her
to get an infection. She's diabetic. An infection would be catastrophic. So like, yes, please call me the medic, blah, 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 blah. They call the medic. Medic comes with the worst attitude ever. Asshole. Complete asshole dude. They call, of course, because I've asked for a medic, they now start calling people. Right. So we've got the main security guy gets called over. He's there with his walkie-talkie, very official, in his big security shirt. Whatever. the poor guys that are actually working the haunted house are actually the nicest ones. They bring her water, you know. One of them brings over a wheelchair. They won't let her take the wheelchair because it belongs to the haunted house, and they have to go. And so they tell us we have to go get a wheelchair at the front of the park.
Right.
And I'm like, sure. I'm not walking to the other side of the park for a wheelchair. You're going to bring me a fucking wheelchair. Because at this point, I know she's going to swell. Like right now, she's okay. In like 10 minutes, she's going to start swelling. Again, no permanent damage, but you know, superficial enough. She's older. I was like, she needs a wheelchair. She's going to need a break at some point. I refuse to go get the wheelchair. wheelchair at the front of the park. So the poor guy goes, the security like, no, our policy is he cannot go, blah, 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 blah.
Like, they got 100 people there just hanging out with their security, but none of them could go get the fucking wheelchair.
No, and they're all just like, clearly they're all concerned about liability, okay? And I'm telling this story because, honestly, we're not going to sue them. Like, we're not planning to sue them. Like, there was no permanent damage. It just kind of fucking sucked how they handled it, but it was almost a lesson on how not to handle things, because if you just piss people off enough, then they want to sue you. Like, I mean, I walked out of there like, I kind of want to sue them because they're such assholes, you know, but fine, whatever. So at some point, they're just not taking us seriously. And so when I just had enough, I literally grabbed my phone out of my purse. I gave it to my husband and very loudly in front of their entire team. I said, please start taking pictures of everyone, everything, get everybody's names in this room. And everyone just like froze and looked at me. And I was like, right now, like get a piece, like get my phone, start taking pictures of everything, turn the camera on, get that guy's name, everybody's name. I want it all in writing before we leave this.
That's absolutely smart.
And they fucking freaked out. Yeah. The wheelchair magically appeared. Magically appeared. 15 minutes. Okay.
Imagine that.
Magically appeared. And then at the end of the medic, you know, like cleaning her and whatever and bandaging her up, he brings out a waiver.
We all lose it.
No way. And he starts explaining the waiver to
have her.
Her
sign a waiver on the spot.
Have her sign a waiver as she's sitting there in the wheelchair.
With
the
blood,
medic. The blood medic.
Right. On her hands.
Yes.
She the could medic, sign it in blood.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So he brings out a waiver, and I walk over.
The medic
is the one trained to have the waiver signed. And he brings it out of his little fanny pack thing he had going on, his little medicine bag. And so I see the paperwork come out, and so I walk over because I had walked slightly away. Leslie was sitting nearby, but within earshot, as was my husband, who is a former commercial litigator. Right. So there's three lawyers in this party of six, okay? I see paperwork come out, and I walk over to listen, and they're explaining to her, like, here you're signing that you do not wish to call an ambulance, that you don't want further treatment.
Basically, you're fine, bitch. You're
like,
fine.
You're fine to go. Fine. I'm not leaving the park. I'm good. Like, all is well. Uh-huh. And I'm listening to this, and I say to the guy, she's not signing anything. Like, I interrupt and I say, she's not signing anything. And he says, I'm sorry, you cannot respond for her. The conversation is with her. And my mom, who is not used to us putting on lawyer mode, right, at all, says, she's my daughter. And the guy's like, it doesn't matter if she's your daughter. She can't respond to you. At which point I'm like, I literally go, let me make this very clear. I'm her daughter and I'm her lawyer. And again, she's not signing shit.
Right.
And the guy's face just changed. Leslie, who's within earshot, stands up and goes, we're all lawyers, as a matter of fact. Like,
she ain't signing shit.
There's three of us. And no, she ain't signing shit.
Like, keep it going, my friend.
But,
like,
I mean,
I can't believe that a medic is pulling out
a release. The medic was the one in charge of the release.
A liability release. That's crazy.
Isn't that great?
Isn't that crazy?
Well, you know, on a commercial piece of property, one thing that's important to know is that while you may or may not be able to recover money from them, most commercial premises with insurance have something called MedPay.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you're familiar with MedPay or not.
No.
But MedPay is kind of like PIP. It will pay medical expenses without regard to fault and without being prejudicial to your right to make a recovery down the road. So a lot of commercial premises will have a $5,000 or a $10,000 MedPay provision. So even if you don't intend to sue them, or even if it was all your fault or whatever, you can still get that money from them for your out-of-pocket expenses or for your medical expenses.
That makes sense. I mean, let's assume we really did have to call an ambulance, or God forbid she'd broken a bone or something.
No, if she would have really broken a bone or something, this would be a very, yeah.
I mean, it was clear what it was, and it is what it is, and, you know, we're not looking to sue them, but it's crazy. It's crazy how they react.
I'd be curious to see the pictures of the area, though, to understand what the setup was. Because those parks are usually, well, you know better than me, but those parks, I mean, they're pretty well set up all in all.
And I will tell you, and the time that I worked in Disney World, I mean, there's no Halloween Horror Nights in Disney World, right? But, like, not to bash Universal or whatever, but you don't allow the guests to go to the back lot. Like, that it just kills the entire, like, fantasy of what Disney World is. And there were such strict guidelines about that. I mean, you will be fired immediately if you allow, as an employee, somebody in the back lot. Now, they have such an overflow, it seems, of people, and they got to reroute these fucking lines.
Yeah, it's just the lines.
The queues to wherever you can.
The backlog
and so it went behind this massive building, and now the queue is like hitting these drainage areas in several parts.
That were areas that you normally never have guests.
You would never have anybody back there.
Well, so right after, so once my mom fell, they actually got a guy, and they put some kid there with a flashlight pointing at the bitch, and then everyone that walked by, he would just be like, watch your step, watch your step. And so when I pull up the phone, I'm like, I want a picture of that guy holding the flashlight on the drainage, like, right now, and his name.
Absolutely.
Saying he got assigned to this spot because people fall.
Yep.
Anything else other than the trucking industry that comes to mind that does that kind of instant?
Yeah.
What about,
I mean,
like transportation, like airplanes? No?
Transportation does it. You see it sometimes in hospitals where risk management gets involved very quickly because they know something bad happened. I had a, this is not on the camera, right? I had a
we're on camera.
Oh.
X-nay, that's.
Edit that out. I had a case with a big hospital where the injuries were horrible and risk management was involved 30 seconds after the bad stuff happened.
Wow.
And they're busy getting witnesses, getting statements, preparing their defense. And a lot of times because, you know, as a victim of some incident where you've been hurt or you've lost a family member, you're too distraught to even think straight.
Yeah, that's right. It's that even in small cases, Randy, you know, like this example I give at Universal, the fact that the medic has the waivers in his bag, it's just crazy to me. But, you know, I fell and broke my leg on a cruise ship a couple years back. And I won't go into the details because there was some lawsuit involved. But I will tell you that I was sitting at the medical place downstairs on the cruise ship and they're doing my intake and asking me questions about, like, what did I fall on and what did I trip on? And I'm like, how is this relevant to my medical care? It is not, you know, like, and what was on the floor and what was this? And I'm like, and I was in screaming pain because I had actually broken my leg in two places. We didn't know that in the moment. I just knew I was in screaming pain. My husband, who was much, much more rational at that point than I was, started yelling about how nobody gave a fuck about their liability right now and they needed to treat me. And eventually they called security on him and almost had him arrested.
On a cruise ship.
Oh, yeah.
And in the middle of the ocean. You've never met my husband. He's the most docile thing. Like, he's not the kind to start a fight, okay? That's not who he is. But yes, they called security because he raised his voice about them preserving.
Because they're like, this girl doesn't drink. And of course, like, they're asking her, like, how many drinks did you have tonight?
Are these the shoes you were wearing? And I was like, yeah, they are.
She's like in
flats.
Screaming pain.
Like, it was crazy.
So let me just tell you guys, I want to thank you both for having me
here
today.
No, thank you, Randy.
I really appreciate it. It means a lot to me that you guys thought enough of me to have me come out and speak with you about this. I appreciate it. I think it's important for other lawyers to know about this area of practice, not just because it can be lucrative to them, but also because their clients oftentimes are asking them questions about this.
Sure.
So if this is of any benefit to anybody, I think it's fantastic. And I really admire both of you for doing this. So, and thank you for having me.
No, thank you. Thank you for coming. And that is today's episode of Law Shit You Should Know. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening and watching. And tune in again next time.